This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Ultimate HA7 Joint Formula from Purity Products. Ultimate HA7 features the joint-boosting benefits of hyaluronic acid. HA works like a shock absorber, helping to cushion and soothe your joints. Plus, this HA also hydrates your skin. It's powerful support for your joints, cartilage, skin, and connective tissues. So call 800-983-1154 and get a full-size bottle of HA7 for only $9. And you also get free shipping. Call now to claim your $9 trial bottle of HA7 with free shipping. 1-800-983-1154. These move fast, so call now. 1-800-983-1154. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take a deep dive on the immune system because today's guest is the author of a great new book entitled An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System. He is Pulitzer Prize winner Matt Richtel, and Matt is a reporter for the New York Times. And he received the Pulitzer Prize for national reporting for a series of articles that he developed into his first nonfiction book, a previous book called A Deadly Wandering. He's appeared on NPR's radio airwaves, PBS, NewsHour, and other major media outlets. And so, Matt, you know, the book is entitled An Elegant Defense. And so why did you call a book about the immune system an elegant defense? I mean, don't we see a lot of examples of the immune system going awry?
Well, first of all, Dr. Hoffman, thank you for having me on. And we absolutely do see it going awry. But what we also see is that given all the circumstances where it might go awry, it actually treads very beautifully and very delicately often. And so I tend to think of the immune system as a combination of bouncer and ballet dancer, quite elegant in its defense of our body, certainly given the myriad of threats we face.
Okay. So one of the contentions of your book, and you developed this nicely, there are also, you know, a lot of case histories and anecdotes which illustrate the story. The book kind of reads a little bit like a mystery novel in some ways as you solve various problems of individuals who suffer from immune challenges. But why would you say there is now sort of a mismatch between the immune systems we evolved with over millions of years of exquisite evolutionary honing and refinement and our current environment as individuals in our modern world?
Well, the reason I say that there's a mismatch, and arguably there really is a mismatch now, is because the immune system evolved, took shape epochs ago. It is probably 500, 480 million years old in its deepest sense, but we have had such extraordinary changes to the human environment in a relatively recent period of time. So, in other words, our defense network evolved under conditions where we faced certain kinds of threats and certain kinds of natural environments, and I'll speak to those more specifically in a second. But in the broadest terms, we can have, and we often do, have a mismatch now between the environment that we evolved in and the one we've created. That's the 30,000-foot view. May I dip a little further into 15,000 feet or even lower?
Let's elaborate.
So what do I mean specifically? Well, let me first define the immune system and its role in us and, by extension, our role in the world. Now, Dr. Hoffman, I want to be very respectful. You, after all, are the physician, and the closest I got to medical school is my wife attended. So I have no, you know, I want to understand my station in this world, and what I tell you is drawn from some tremendous immunologists. The best, arguably, I had the privilege of interviewing the very greatest immunologists in the world, the people who built our understanding of this, but I do want to say this with tremendous respect. So, of course, correct me if I miss something here from your standpoint.
But, you know, I got to say, you know, for my part as a physician, I think the vast majority of physicians have basic training in this, but haven't done a really deep dive on the subject of immunity. You know, we get, maybe 30 hours of training and boom, okay?
Yeah, and you know, my wife said the same thing. She went to medical school about 15 years ago. When I would tell her some of the stuff in this, she would say, oh, I just learned something. They didn't really teach us that. And I think on one level, you might think in naming this book, The New Science of the Immune System, is a little bit exaggerated. But the truth is, and then I'll come back to what we're discussing, I think there's a reason that medical schools didn't talk about this so much. We just didn't understand that much because so much of it was happening on the molecular level. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time to develop the tools, the technology, to understand that molecular level. So, okay, returning back to our relationship to the world and the immune system and as it relates to that, I've come to see myself as I walk around in the world very differently than I did before I began this book. Do you remember the movie The Matrix, Dr. Hoffman?
Oh, big time, sure, yeah.
Okay, so the guy, the main character's walking around and there's all the ones and zeros around him, mm-hmm. and it's almost as if he's seeing a part of the world no one else is seeing. Well, I've come to realize that we are walking around in a world covered in microbes, as if ones and zeros. Everywhere around us are bacteria, virus, parasite, on the surfaces around us, on our skin, inside of us. I want to make a distinction probably many of your listeners understand, and some may not. It took me a while. Just because I say microbe or bacteria or virus doesn't mean I'm talking about disease or pathogen. Mm-hmm. They're not the same thing. Many of these are friendly to us. We cooperate with them. So, as we think about the immune system, I've learned to think about this network, this organization that is getting along with, that is trying to assess the world around us. What should it attack? What should be helpful? What must it cooperate with? This defines the environment that we evolved in. The immune system was trying to make very delicate decisions so that it attacked when necessary, but didn't attack in ways that caused too much damage or collateral damage. Mm-hmm. Everything, am I making sense so far?
Yeah, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so part of that environment that we evolved in had two components, all those ones and zeros, all those microbes around us. Some were threatening, many were friendly, but the immune system got trained through its interaction with all those microbes about how to be properly calibrated, how to respond effectively and in just the right measure to the microbes around us. But now, lo and behold, we've done a whole bunch of things in the last several hundred, 300, 500 years to begin to radically shift that environment. More recently, through things like antimicrobial soaps or lots of cleaning things, but also lots of alien, for want of a better word, industrial things we might ingest. Here I could speak of processed foods, mm-hmm. or chemicals, things we've invented. That is a radical shift. And so in some ways, we're starving the immune system of natural microbes that might have trained it, and in mm-hmm. some ways we're overburdening it with unnatural things that it's not sure how to respond to, hence the mismatch.
So that's very interesting. So on one hand, it's as if the immune system requires going through sort of a boot camp. I mean, you know, when you first, get a computer, you know, you have to download a bunch of programs. And it seems like the immune system is like that. It's a little bit of a tabula rasa. It has some basic capabilities, but not many. But you have to download programs. But the programs come from the environment. And if we don't have a, quote, natural environment, then we get incomplete programming.
So beautifully said. Where were you when I was looking for metaphors?
Okay.
But, you know, in a word, kindergarten, I mean, anybody who's got kids or has been around kids, see how often they get sick. That is not a problem, actually. Mm-hmm. That is boot camp. That is the functional equivalent, if you want to go with the boot camp metaphor, of getting some sore muscles on the way to building them in mm-hmm. boot camp. Mm-hmm. And it is essential. And there's actually a very good reason why the immune system is created such that it needs some boot camp. And it's this, the system needed to have enough flexibility mm-hmm. to adapt to the world around it, but the capacity to develop enough specificity mm-hmm. to deal with very difficult situations. Here's a perfect example for me that's stuck in my head, such an everyday experience we have that shows about the immune system's the necessity of boot camp that goes on regularly. Mm-hmm. So if you get if you get sick and you know it's coming on, but your doctor always says, I mean, if you were my doctor, I'd come to you, Dr. Hoffman, I don't feel very well, and you would say, you know, it's probably going to take 5 to 7 days. And just to put it to it, what is, Dr. Hoffman, what's happening during those 5 to 7 days?
Well, the pathogen is being recognized. Your immune system is starting, is starting to rev up. And ultimately, hopefully, you'll triumph over the pathogen, or else the pathogen will triumph over you, and we'll have to put you in the ICU and give you, antibiotics and hope you survive.
Yeah, and so that is, I went through that exercise because that's exactly what Dr. Hoffman would have said if I'd come to him as a patient with something not apparently deadly on its face, a nasty virus or bacteria, mm-hmm. he would say, you know, maybe I'd take antibiotics, but if it were a virus or a bacteria I'm capable of fighting, he or any doctor would say, look, you've got to let, and now this is the term of art, it's the adaptive immune system, this flexible but ultimately specific immune system, get up to speed. Now, going back to that learning thing, this implicates both the learning, the boot camp that we need to go through, the mismatch, but it also gets at why vaccines are so valuable. Because there are some cases, like smallpox or polio or other diseases that are so effective as diseases, we may not have time the first time we encounter them mm-hmm. to get our system online.
Mm-hmm. The alternative might be to wait multiple generations, have 4/5 of humanity eradicated, and then maybe rely on natural selection to create a polio immune population or an HIV immune population.
Yes, and that comes with an enormous risk. I mean, I guess if you wanted to say in a perverse way, well, we like the idea of culling the herd, you could just ignore these diseases. I personally, as a father of two, you know, and a husband of a wife I cherish, and I also like our dog, but not really a big part of this conversation.
He gets shots,
you know,
too.
I like the idea. Right. Yes, true. I mean, this has happened. Black Plague or the flu of, you know, the 1918 pandemic. Mm-hmm. We lost millions, tens of millions mm-hmm. of people who didn't have the immune systems to fight. But now we have the capacity to protect ourselves, and that is done through the very same mechanisms we're describing. It's like instead of going to kindergarten, you got to go to college and took an advanced course.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, just to be the devil's advocate, the type of immunity that's conferred by vaccines, and I enter the anti-vaxxer camp here on this, but the type of immunity that's conferred by vaccines is a little bit artificial. I recently was in the country of Belgium, and I visited a doctor. I had dinner with a doctor and his family, and one of the kids had chickenpox. And I said, "Gee, do you vaccinate against chickenpox in Belgium?" He says, "You know, in all other countries of the world, we vaccinate against chickenpox. We decided in Belgium. We looked at the science. We felt that the benefits, the risks were outweighed by the benefits. In other words." They actually have chickenpox parties for kids at a very early age so that kids get a mild case of it and are not required to take the vaccine. So is it possible that there's some element of the hygiene hypothesis that is undermined by vaccinating against all and sundry so that kids don't have normal childhood diseases?
I want to be cautious here not to get into the I don't want to get into a broad back and forth about the controversies around vaccines.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The main reason that I don't want to do it is I have, first of all, we don't vaccinate against all and sundry. We vaccinate generally pretty darn cautiously, with a lot of science behind it. And, if you go look at what the CDC will say about, their research, you will find that it is very rare that you have a really dangerous adverse reaction. It was not true at the beginning. Polio's vaccines initially had some challenges. The variolation that predated smallpox had some challenges. I don't want to say that vaccines done poorly are good. Vaccines done well serve the purposes I think I've outlined for the reasons I've outlined them. And I just want to say one more thing in this context as it relates to antibiotics. The idea behind vaccines, and it is true also of immunotherapy that is forthcoming, is to try to prime the immune system to do what it does well rather than attacking the pathogen. And the reason it's risky to attack a pathogen, and here I will just for a second lump together antibiotics and chemotherapy and other blunt objects. When you attack a pathogen, and you can make a case antibiotics is a kind of chemotherapy, what you are doing is you are you're getting a little baby and a little bathwater at the same time. You, in order to go after the disease inside our body, you have to throw a little bit of napalm on it.
You're going to get some collateral damage.
You get some collateral damage and in some case devastating collateral damage. We tend not to think about the collateral damage with antibiotics, but we are awakening to that problem. We can talk about it more in a second. But the reason I herald vaccines in this context is, and again, I outline this in the book, but you would love to take preventative steps to not have to use the napalm later. If you could forestall the napalm, that's a good deal.
Indeed. Well, so disinfectants, they're ubiquitous now, disinfectant soaps, toothpaste, you name it, hand wash. Good idea, bad idea? I mean, in the book, you actually have a chapter entitled, Should We Pick Our Noses?
Yeah, I'll tell you in a second how I came to that question, which turned out to be more reasonable than I guess I thought. But let's just talk about the big picture for a second. So there is an idea called the hygiene hypothesis that since has been updated to be called the old friends mechanism. But what it says is that our immune system is best served when trained by that myriad of microbes that we discussed earlier. And as we remove through excessive hygiene some of those microbes, we're not only removing the more noxious ones that would train us to deal with invaders, they also may be stealing from us some of the friendly ones that become part of our microbiome, but also, whether or not they become part of our microbiome, help inform the worldview, if you will, of our immune systems. The upshot of this is, many immunologists tell me, look, you don't need to be so germophobic. You could pick up a piece of food off the floor and eat it after a few seconds.
So the 5-second rule doesn't apply.
The what?
The 5-second
rule. The 5-second rule.
Right.
Yes. Unless it's raw meat, then there's the 0-second rule.
Right. Okay.
That's where I'm extra careful. But, because those can have real pathogens on them. But 5-second rule, you may want to rethink. You don't need to squirt your hands all the time because, number one, you may not be helping yourselves, but you may actually be harming yourselves and you may be harming the rest of us in a climate change-like reaction where we are starving the environment of things that we have relied upon to help save us.
We're reducing diversity
through diversity.
Right. Yeah.
Through mere diversity. I want to do the one caveat here. I'm not suggesting, you know, go lick your dog.
Serious problems can occur. Right.
There's a 0-second rule on dog licking.
Right.
But And I'm not saying be decidedly not hygienic. What I'm saying is that we have probably been excessively worried about germs, and it's coming back to haunt us in some way. Mm-hmm. This is from the perspective of a modern industrialized country. Different conversation if you're in a slum where sewage runs wildly. You'll see some stories from me about that in the New York Times shortly about drug-resistant infections and some of these very difficult areas where disease is rampant, but that's just not true where we live. So you can afford to be a little less germophobic, and here's the other thing, Dr. Hoffman. It's not so bad to get a cold now and again. It's really, it's not going to do you that much.
That's sometimes how I reassure myself. You know, I get a cold and I go, darn, you know, my immune system failed me. But then I go, hey, you know, this is part of my immune system in action. It needed a reboot. And I'm going to rev up all my immune defenses. And maybe, just maybe, this will have ramifications in terms of preventing an autoimmune disease or maybe even fighting cancer ultimately. You know, being sick is part of normal immune response.
To put a finer point on it, being sick is part of being healthy. And I think we're... In reporting this book, you know, I very blessed, have a great publisher. They stand by HarperCollins. They stand behind me. And, you know, like all businesses that want to make money, you know, when we first started doing this, they asked me, I mean, they ultimately wanted to do what I wanted to do, but they asked, well, will you offer the magic bullets for health? You know, like, right. Eat more celery
the
or whatever. The
10-point plan for optimizing your immune system, you know, something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. And I said to them, look, that's not the sort of journalist I am. If I were to find that, look, I'd love to be the first to tell you that eating avocado and cheese would save your life mm-hmm. with a little chocolate and a few lattes mixed in. But what I wish I could back that up. But what I said that I would do, and I think I have done, is I'm trying to provide the science such that we can make better decisions on a day-to-day basis. And the truth is, it's a bitter pill in some ways, but there is no simple pill to swallow. I want to tie this back to what you were saying about you reassure yourself that getting sick is a part of getting healthy. One of the traps we fall into in modern life, creating yet another mismatch, is that we are always in a hurry to get well or not rest, mm-hmm. to put it another way. Mm-hmm. And the upshot of that is that we're looking for simple answers when the actual answers may be, while simple, not immediate. You cannot have a magic pill to get over a head cold. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, there are not a lot of shortcuts. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause because, as our listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. And in part two, we're going to take a deeper dive into the components of the immune system. You hear all this terminology. It almost sounds like Chinese boxes, white blood cells, neutrophils, monocytes, lymphocytes, T cells, B cells, helper, suppressor, and natural killer cells. There's a whole alphabet soup of types of parts of our immune system. And we're going to look at some of those parts. And we'll also talk about the way that certain lifestyle factors may have an impact on immunity. Our guest is author of a great new book. He's Matt Richtel, New York Times reporter, Pulitzer Prize winner. The book is called An Elegant Defense, just out this week, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.